Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
What up, though? Shout out to my homeboy Ian Neal in Cardiff for breaking the world's records for the biggest vegetable. Man, I want to tell you something, man. When I do my show in Cardiff, I want you to come backstage and see me because I do vegetation myself, and I want to know your secret so I can show you my vegetables and see if you can grow that into a real big vegetable. So Ian Neal from Cardiff, come see your boy Snoop Dogg. I got two tickets for you when I get to town. You dig?
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of The Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. He's green, so don't make him angry. You wouldn't like him when he's angry. Here he is, Mike Novak. And they pay me for this, folks. Okay.
Wow. Strange sitting here in this studio.
Yeah. Who are you again?
I don't know. The last couple of days have been like that.
How was the reunion?
The reunion was, it was good. It's a lot's happened in the last couple of days, last couple of weeks. And first of all, thank you and Beth Botts for filling in for a couple of shows.
No problem.
The reason I do that is, I know, some people like to do their best of stuff. Me, it's always got to be fresh material.
Live radio.
Like produce.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be fresh.
Fresh.
It's got to be on your table and
this
fresh.
This is as fresh and organic as you can get, especially with the radio.
Well, speaking of organic, did you hear at the top of the show that little, I got to play that one more time because it was so short.
It was Snoop Dogg talking gardening?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
All right, look this up because this guy in Wales, I would say Google rutabaga Wales.
Rutabaga Wales.
And this guy in Wales came up with the world's largest rutabaga. Okay. I think it would be under news, actually, rather than... At any rate... it's gotten out and I'd go to the news.
But it's in Wales, not like rutabaga Wales.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's not like the
like the mammal.
Not the
it's
mammal
the
in
place.
The ocean. No, Wales, as in United Kingdom.
Okay.
Hit the news section there.
Okay.
And do that. I would say that's where you're going to find it.
Snoop Dogg sees gardening advice in YouTube video.
Yeah. But I was actually hoping you'd look up the Wales guy.
But what? I still want to know how you
got... Here we are. Okay. Okay. So you got it.
Oh, dear.
We got to post this, okay?
Yeah. Are you sure?
Yeah, why
you
not?
You know what that green stuff is behind him is, don't you?
Yeah, it's Marahoochie Hooch.
Uh-huh. Well, it's Snoop Dogg.
Or maybe not. Or maybe it's just a plant. Maybe it's an... it could be an Aurelia.
That's chronic if I've ever seen it.
Which looks like...
I don't know much about gardening, but that is not... tropical plants.
Well, yes, they are.
Oh, well.
They are tropical plants.
Technically, yes.
Because they're not, I don't believe they're...
That's no hydrangea, is all I'm saying.
They're not perennials here in our area of the world. So scroll up a little bit, because it says, it was...
a world record garden... All right,
popular rapper Snoop Dogg has recently invited a world record holder gardener from Wales to accompany him backstage for his upcoming world tour in the country because Snoop was so impressed by the enormous size of the man's vegetables.
Is that code?
I don't know.
That's what I love.
You said rutabaga, so...
Some people call it a rutabaga.
Rutabaga.
I guess.
I'm going to now.
See, you know, here we are. We're like, we're not even 5 minutes into the mission, and we're already in trouble.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Welcome
back.
So, yeah, thank you. I'll bet Beth didn't get in this much trouble in two whole shows.
No, Beth was spot on, very focused.
Unlike me,
she's
highly
very
distractible.
Very focused.
Linear, maybe?
I wouldn't say linear, but she's definitely more of a journalist in the fact that
there's certain things
she wants to do, there's certain things she wants to say, and she wants to make sure all of her points are laid out and very clear.
Good for her. That ain't me.
No, it's not you at all. But she did. I was like, you might know, you know, jokingly, I was like, you might know more about this than Mike does. She goes, well, Mike knows more about radio. And I did say that you were the entertainer.
Oh, wow. She damning with faint praise, huh?
To that, I said, well, I guess so. If you're an entertainer and you know a good amount about plants, what do you do? Oh, yeah, you get a radio show and name it after yourself. Works out.
So at any rate, this guy Neil is I don't know his last name.
Ian Neil is what it looks like.
Oh, is it Ian Neil?
Ian Neil.
Okay. Oh yeah, there it is. Mm-hmm. Ian Neil, the Welsh gardener. Grew the largest. We got to find out what the size of it was, but before you don't go away from this page yet.
84 pound rutabaga. It's right there.
Oh, there it is. Very good. Okay. I can't even read.
84 pound. What do you do with that much rutabaga? I don't even know what you do with a standard rutabaga.
I don't know. You use it. I'm not even sure.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever eaten
84 pounds.
A rutabaga.
Okay. So, Ian Neil. So, Snoop Dogg does this video, and I'm going to play it again because this is, we played it at the top of the show, and this is congratulating Ian Neil on his 84 pound rutabaga. And you got to understand, if you look at the video, and we got to let's put it on the Facebook page.
Okay.
Snoop is standing in front of this, what looks suspiciously like,
Chronic. Or rutabaga.
Like Dubansky. Okay? Looks suspiciously like Dubansky. And this is what he says.
What up, though? Shout out to my homeboy Ian Neil in Cardiff for breaking the world's records for the biggest vegetable. Man, I want to tell you something, man. When I do my show in Cardiff, I want you to come backstage and see me because I do vegetation myself, and I want to know your secret so I can show you my vegetables and see if you can grow that into a real big vegetable. So Ian Neil from Cardiff, come see your boy Snoop Dogg. I got two tickets for you when I get to town. You dig?
Ian apparently was like, it was very nice to be asked, but I'm more of a country and western man myself.
I like that. I like the Welsh guys, a CW fan.
Snoop! There he is. All right. I will put this on the Facebook.
Sure.
I'll put it on mine and yours and the show page.
All right. Welcome to the big show on a Sunday. It's a drizzly, dreary Sunday, but, you know, you're going to get some of those, especially after the last couple of weeks. Oh.
I couldn't believe how dark it was when I got up this morning. That's what blew me away.
I think it's climate change.
You think?
Yeah.
Really?
I'm blaming it on climate change.
That how dark it was?
Yeah, this morning. I got to talk to Rick DeMille.
Well, I'm going to ask Rick about that.
Ask Rick about whether there's something about it's just been getting darker and darker lately.
Isn't the planet doing its rotation in orbit? Doesn't that happen every year?
It's climate change. Actually, as Rick would say, climate variability.
Mm.
I believe it's that. I think that's the cause.
We'll have to ask.
On today's show, a week from tomorrow is Food Day. Now, you're probably going to hear a lot more about it this week. It starts getting into, full gear during the week because people will be pushing all their events, and there's a ton of them all over the country, a ton of them all over the Chicago area, including one out in Elgin next Saturday and Sunday. It's kind of getting a jump start on Food Day, and we will get to Kathleen Hare from out that way. The event out in Elgin is called Mindful Mouthfuls, Back to Nature Food Day Fair and Tasting. And that will be in Elgin. We start with that. Rick DeMille weather around the bottom of the hour, maybe quarter to, depend when we get to him. And then in the second hour, we're actually going to talk a little gardening. You know, if Beth can do it, I can do it.
I hope so.
but it's not food gardening. It's making your area look nice, and we're talking the Magnificent Mile because, you know, folks come to town. Often, that's the only place they go.
I have to admit, my son and I last Monday went through the Lurie Garden and all the Millennium Park Gardens and stuff, and it was breathtaking. It was just beautiful.
It really is. It's amazing that even at this time of year, you go, wow. Well, and last week it was beautiful.
Oh, and the mums. God, they're gorgeous.
They're not native, but that's okay.
They're still gorgeous.
Yes, they are. Just saying. Just saying. But Eric Grossnickel, who is with Bartlett Tree Experts and the Greater North Michigan Avenue Association Public Way Committee, they just had their awards for, you know, and like I was saying, a lot of people come to town, and the only place they go is the Magnificent Mile. End of story. And they go shopping, and then they get back on the plane, and then they... Mm-hmm.
The bean and stand under it and take some pictures.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You know what I think we have to do in Chicago? We have to ban photos at the bean.
I completely disagree.
I
love taking pictures at the bean.
I know it. And it's like taking pictures of a sunset. We have to ban pictures of sunsets as well. Because that's all people would do.
You set up said bean photo. You have to be savvy when you do it. You got to be a little witty. You can't just stand in front of it and just, you know, oh, my goofy reflection.
Let me just say it's all been done. I can guarantee it.
Oh,
by
sure.
Now, it's all been done.
But I had my son stand with his back to it, put his head against it and his hands up so it looked like he was literally holding himself on top of himself. It was a cute picture for a four-year-old.
Gosh, I bet that's never been done.
I'm sure it's been done, but four-year-old children are adorable, and that's just darn witty and freaking cute. Just darn witty, because I can't swear, it's the radio.
And it's Sunday, and a lot of people are going to church right
Sunday
now.
Sunday morning. Heather won't swear.
So Eric will be here, and we'll talk about the winners of the landscape contest, and they have like 100 different landscapes on the parkways and next to the buildings on the Magnificent Mile. You see these beautiful things, and they do them all year round. And they're changing out. They've changed out for fall. They're going to change out for winter pretty soon. And we'll talk to him about how that all works. And sustainable food fundamentals is something that Heather brought to my attention.
Aw.
Thank you.
No problem.
She found this article about orange juice. And a woman who did a study on what goes into orange juice and how, well, your orange juice might not be exactly what you think it is. I mean, we all have this impression that the orange juice is squeezed straight from the orange right into the carton, and they have people just squeezing oranges right
wonderful.
Into cartons. You'd need a lot of people to do that, wouldn't you? Just standing.
Jobs.
They'd have to wear gloves, of course.
One would hope. And hair nets. I want the gloves and hair nets. Yeah. If you're going to be a squeezer.
Man, if you found a hair in your orange juice. Oh.
It's hard enough when you're in a restaurant. You find it in your food.
Oh,
like,
I know. You just kind of go,
Whole meal shot. My sister actually had... was taking her children to the restroom the other day at a restaurant, and a cockroach fell from the ceiling onto her chestal region. She was kind of freaking out. Apparently, she ran into the stall, stripped down practically nothing to make sure it wasn't in her shirt, you know, because once a bug lands on you like that, you go all heebie-jeebie crazy.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they came out of the bathroom, and they were wrapping up dinner. She's like, okay, let's go, and got them all out of there so fast.
Oh, that is funny. Hey, we already got our first tweet of the day is from Sarita Pie. She says, I can't believe I heard Snoop Dogg first thing in the morning on the Mike Novak
you
show.
You never know what you're going to get with
We started with Snoop.
We're the mystery packet
of
seeds.
And of course,
who knows?
You talk to my friend Max, she says, I hate that guy because he's a misogynist. And it's like,
there's much to be said for and against about Snoop Dogg.
We're not going to go into a Snoop Dogg
debate. No, we're
not going
to go into it at all.
Yeah.
He's got some damn catchy songs, though, I will say.
But that quote was pretty funny.
That's priceless.
So anyway, it's Sustainable Food Fundamentals. The last thing today will be Alyssa Hamilton, who's out of Canada, wrote this book called Squeezed, What You Don't Know About Orange Juice. Now, she wrote it a couple of years ago, but it's still making waves, which is kind of interesting because I didn't hear about it then. Had I known about it then, I'd have definitely talk to her. We will talk about that. And at some point, I'm hoping today, I mentioned that Food Day is a week from tomorrow, the 24th of October. Lots of events going on. Sure, all well and good. And then the day after that, Mayor Rahm Emanuel is having what he calls a food summit. And apparently he's invited Michelle Obama and the CEOs of some big food chains, and I bet Walmart's going to be part of that, and allegedly some local food activists, mayors from 10 cities, to come to Chicago and talk about food. I have issues with this, and I'm going to bring them up. At some point in the show, and because I'm a little concerned about, basically, I'm concerned about the local people getting shut out by the power brokers. You know, same old, high power Washington guy. Oh yeah, I bring in my CEOs and friends, and then the voice of the people who've been on the ground in Chicago doing the real work,
right,
trying to spread the gospel of local food,
right,
are told, here's how it's going to work. We're going to bring in a Walmart,
right.
Live with it.
And
deal
all
with
the produce
it.
Will be from Chile.
And right, exactly. Oh, no, no. But you will. The Walmart will get local. They'll get sustainable
and
food. I doubt it's going to be from your garden.
And it's not treated
but
with any pesticides or dyes or colors or,
I'm a little concerned about that. So I hope at some point in the show to get to that as well. But meanwhile, let's go to line one. Bring in Kathleen Hare. She's the founder of Elgin Green Drinks. And she's with local... Green Drinks and Food, and she's with Local Green Connect. How you doing, Kath? Oh, hello. Oh, wait a second. My fault. Try that again. How you doing?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. It's what a lovely morning, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, sunny and wet.
Oh, is the sun coming out yet? I can't tell in here. We're in a
it
cave.
It was trying. It had a few breakthroughs, but not much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not too bad right now.
You have gotten on board the food train, or rather, Food Day train, I want to ask you why.
Why? Well,
why? Yeah, why? There's a simple question.
That's a big one. You know what? I try to promote as much sustainable living for all of us as I can, and I believe that food is, you know, the one language that we all speak very clearly, and the one thing that, can really make a difference as far as sustainable living for ourselves, as well as for the land and for energy usage, and just across the board, Food Day is something that we need. Earth Day people can relate to. Food Day people live. I mean, they need it to sustain. So I think it's a good language to start up the conversation and get things, maybe make some good changes that are more positive for us.
Well, I hope people do, and I hope they learn something from it. The question I always have, and it's lately, call me a cynic. Call me what you will, but sometimes I think we have too many events and that they all kind of get mashed together. Some people would say, well, why do you need a food day if you got an Earth Day? And, then next we're going to have, a rutabaga day. And, and a Snoop Dogg day, I guess, on top of that.
I'm going to laugh to the day for every time I hear the word rutabaga now.
Yeah, well, I think so. I don't know if you caught that, Kathleen, at the top of the show. But you don't think that things get too diluted by doing too many of them?
Well, I really don't. I think that we need a lot more awareness and education than we have. We're kind of combating a lot of the education that is, excuse my pun, but being fed to us by, marketing agencies.
Whoa!
But I do really, really, I understand what you're saying as well. I mean, there are an overlap of, a lot of different groups doing a lot of the same sort of things, not with regards to Food Day yet, but I'm sure that will be coming. Today is actually World Food Day, And it's been going on since 1979.
All right. Now, okay, I'm sorry, Kathleen, but you're proving my point.
Yeah.
Yeah, if there's already an International Food Day, why didn't the American side of this just celebrate today with International Food Day and make it, you know, one big event?
Well, it really is. October is World Food Month. So today is World Food Day. And, you know, to answer your question directly, though, I don't know why more Americans aren't really grabbing on to a lot of these, you know, ideas and, you know, but there's no time like the present.
Oh, but okay, now there I would disagree with you again. This is just a point counterpoint today, isn't it? I would say Americans are. They are grabbing on to this, and they are, you know, getting an idea that even if they don't know how to do it, and that's part of the problem. Education, as you say, is key in here. Even if they don't know how, they're at least getting the sense that they should be doing something differently.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. I mean, people are starting to realize, you know, myself included, I realize something new every day. And there's just more to it than we realize right now. And we just have to, you know, be more educated, more aware about it. There's a doctor that I'm working with right now who's written a food curriculum. Who can, you know, is actually teaching the community about food. I mean, and that's, it's kind of, you know, when you look at that and you're like, oh, yeah, that's really necessary. And it really is, you know, for myself included, for everyone, just to look at it, how it's changed, where it's come from. You know, it's not like the days with the comfort food from our families. It's not that same food is different now than it was then.
Yeah, but you know what? You can have comfort food that is not bad for you, that is not unhealthy, that is sustainable. I'll tell you, one of my favorite dishes, all kinds of things that we whip up in our house now that I think several years ago I would have said, what? But, you know, my Kathleen has found ways to work with quinoa, which is a very healthy food, and do tricks with that I love, you know?
Oh, yeah, and there's a lot of wonderful things out there. I mean, another good one is kale chips, which doesn't sound so great, but they're actually really good. And everybody that I, you know, you just bake them in the oven, pieces of kale, and they are just as addicting as a potato chip almost.
Heather, do you remember we talked about kale chips a little while ago? I still haven't fixed them. We need to
do that. I've had the veggie chips that they do with the... You can get them at, like, you know, the Whole Foods grocer. Some are potato, some are carrot, some are made from something green, I don't know what. But they're delicious, and they're better for you than potato chips.
Well, of course they are. Mm-hmm. Almost anything. You know, eating my shoe would be better for me than potato chips.
Well, and, you know, and the basic is closer to nature. You know, it's all right here. It's all right there for us.
Well, yeah, and you can, you know, for one thing, kale is one of the easiest things to grow, and it's great in the Midwest, because it's a cool weather crop, and if you walk outside today, you realize, wow, we have a lot of cool weather here in the Midwest, don't we?
Right, mine's still growing; it's still producing right now.
Oh, it'll produce through the first frost, maybe several frosts, and you know, until it gets whacked by a hard freeze. And you know, if you want to put a row cover on it, you can protect it even longer. It's one of those plants. Why don't we take more advantage of it? Kale is great stuff, you know, Swiss chard. And I am your chard overlord, as you know, on the Mike Novak Show.
Right.
Oh, it's such a long story, Kathleen.
You know what? It's all good. I mean,
but he is the Swiss chard overlord.
I am your Swiss chard overlord.
I've never had it either.
You've never had Swiss chard?
Never.
All right.
I love Swiss chard.
What's that?
I love Swiss chard.
It's wonderful. We have to educate this woman, don't we?
Well, there you go. Go ahead.
The only way we educate her is we fix a dish that she enjoys and says, oh, my goodness, I'm eating well and I'm being nourished.
Ding.
Right. And then you just say, then they say, what's in it? You know, because it's like, it's not about what you do. No, it's about the taste and the smell and all of that. And then you're like, oh, those things grow seasonally right here in our beautiful Midwest, you know. It's amazing, really, what we don't know that is so prevalent in our, you know, bountiful.
Well, and that's part of our problem. And when I talk food issues, and you heard me probably talking about the food summit that is coming up in Chicago, where none of the regular people will be invited. The idea is that we have the land, we have the capability of growing just about anything we put on our plate right here in the Midwest. And, you know, oranges not going to do so well, or lemons, but that's okay. And we'll talk about oranges later.
You can do it in a greenhouse,
but
in theory.
You can, in theory, in greenhouses, but not in quantity.
No. Nope.
But there have been studies that show that in the Midwest we have all the capacity to grow fruit and vegetables, and it wouldn't take very much land at all. We don't need to devote every single acre we have to corn and soybeans.
No. Absolutely not. And, you know, it's just increasingly, you know, a lot of the things we're eating are made of corn that we don't even realize are. I mean, some of which are, you know, there's corn in so much of the products that we're eating, especially, you know, fast food, of course, you know. And those are some of the things, you know, that just really bring me to, you know, wanting to create all the events and education programs that are possible just to get all that information out. If I may, there's six different principles for Food Day that, you know, really are the things that I'm supporting.
Go for it.
If I may. The first one is to reduce diet-related disease by promoting safe, healthy foods and truth in labeling. You know, a lot of sugar, of course, you know, consumption is heart disease related. And then also, you know, just knowing that a lot of things aren't really on the label of the food that we're eating.
Oh, you mean like GMOs?
There you go.
And what's that?
And flavor packs.
Well, that'll come up later. Mm-hmm. We don't want to give away our conversation
in
a sec. It's a tease,
yeah.
Yes. Flavor
That's
packs.
That's exactly what we're talking about later.
Think flavor packs by Calvin Klein in your orange juice.
And you
think I'm joking. Wait till we get to the second hour, mm-hmm. folks.
There's going to be petitions at my event, you know, to sign that, letting people know we want truth in labeling. We want to know. Hello, we want to know what's in the food.
Here's a problem, though, Kathleen. And by the way, we're just so you know, we're talking to Kathleen Hare, who's the chief cook and bottle washer for Mindful Mouthfuls, Back to Nature Food Day, Fair and Tasting. That's going to be in Elgin. Let's give and the link is on my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show. But real quickly, give me the time and location.
It's going to be next Saturday and Sunday, October 22nd. On Saturday, it'll be from 10 to 3. On Sunday, it'll be from noon till 5. And it'll be at Simple Balance Holistic Center, located at 221 East Chicago Street in Elgin.
Okay, and back to our conversation. You say we should have everything labeled. I'd love to have GMOs labeled, but, you know, the dirty little secret about GMOs is that they're in so much of our food already. I think the food processors would... Well, you know, if you do these studies, upward of 80, I think it's like 85% or 90% of Americans would like their food labeled and are not. And the minute you put GMOs on there and you tell people GMOs, they'll stop buying it, and it would bring the food industry crashing down in America if they saw. So that's the dirty little secret, is that if we actually labeled GMOs, we would realize how much they have infiltrated the food in America. And I think that that's a non-starter for the food industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you're definitely right about that. I mean, they are in a lot more things than we realize, and it is something that could change the food system as we know it. But you know, I really feel that what we need to do is to take care of ourselves better, and, you know, our bodies, and know what's going in. And no matter what happens after that, I mean, if we're not healthy, I mean, it's what my dad always said. I mean, that's the number one thing, no matter what.
Yeah, right. All right, so you did point number one. What's point number two?
Point number two, supporting sustainable farms.
Absolutely. We believe in that on the Mike Novak Show.
Number three, limiting subsidies to big agribusiness.
Oh, yeah, two dings for that, baby, especially because so much of that is just propping up. You know, here we are wringing our hands in America about how China's not playing fair with their monetary policy. We don't play fair with our ag policy. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me that we get bit in the butt by that. I say, you know, you want a free market, let's let the free market work. Stop paying people for not farming. All right? If that really does work, let's not prop up the big ag. Maybe we could, or if we're going to prop up big ag, let's prop up organics too, but that's not going to happen. What happens in the ag bill is more and more little bits of money have begun to trickle into the organic operations, but certainly by comparison, not enough.
Right, the top 10% get it all. So, you know, that's one thing. The fourth is expand access to food and alleviate hunger.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is something that we have the power to do. So that's actually kind of number one for me. Protect the environment and animals by reforming factory farms. And I think most of us, certainly on your show and who listen to your show, know what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that involves eliminating the toxic, you know, the waste that is produced en masse and that we don't deal with properly, reducing the antibiotics that are injected into animals as a matter of course, and which are going to produce superbugs that are going to kill us all, and on and on.
Exactly. And, you know, and it's amazing the chemicals that are still being sprayed. And, you know, it doesn't matter if they say they're only being sprayed in certain areas. And the wind takes it everywhere. And it's just become part of, like you said, you know, it's in more places than we realize.
You know, it's one of my favorite songs. They call the wind glyphosate. No, that's a different song. Wait a second. Okay. Anyway.
Okay, I like that. Promote health by curbing junk food marketing to kids.
Mm-hmm. You know, they just part of that was that ruling, I guess, over the weekend that, and Heather, you must be interested in that, you can use cartoons to market cereals to kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again,
what's changed there? They've been using cartoons to market cereals to kids forever.
When I was a kid, they were using cartoons to market cereals to kids. I mean,
they're great. How many generations is that? Yeah. How many?
Yeah. Absolutely. All of us.
Yeah.
Every single solitary one of us. And that's why we need this, you know, this new food curriculum, this new learning, this new looking, because I still get caught up in, you know, being cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Every once in a while, I'll just feel that urge, you know, and it's just been brought in.
I have to admit that I haven't had Frosted Flakes in probably 30 years.
My father is a Frosted Flakes addict.
Really?
We have Frosted Flakes in the house all the time. And then just yesterday, I sat down with my son. Now, no sugar. They were plain. But he had his first Snap, Crackle, Pop experience over the cereal bowl where, you know.
I can't tell you how much sugar I used to dump into Rice Krispies.
Oh, me too. Me too. That's exactly why I won't give it to my son. And he's probably listening right now going, Mama doesn't give me sugar.
And for the longest time, I was a cereal addict.
I still like cereal.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, baby.
I love it.
It's
easy.
And after you've been to the bar at 4 a.m.
Usually, once you hit your 20s, that's when cereal is the most advantageous.
Yeah.
Because it's quick, it's easy, and absorbent.
Yeah.
That's true. I've been working on having vegetable smoothies, healing smoothies in the morning. And it's all the local stuff that's growing in my garden and, you know, the local farmers drop-offs that I get. And, I put a little bit of something nice in there, like an apple or a pineapple. But I'm getting, like, kale and all of these things that we just talked about in my breakfast smoothies now. But you know what? I still, you know, I'm so human. I still go back to a cereal now and then. So.
You know, I'm thinking, you know, you got put an idea in my head there, Kathleen. I'm thinking breakfast cereal smoothies. Whip them up in a blender. Fruit Loops and...
like Frosted Flakes, but it has kale in it.
Some kale.
I want to make you a Frosted Flake kale smoothie with Swiss chard,
yikes.
Mr. Overlord.
Yikes.
All right. When you drink the whole thing down in 5 minutes, I'll give you $50.
Point number five.
Yeah. Exactly. And also with that, with the marketing to kids, it's of course the school lunches. You know,
yeah.
You know, a big thing to tackle.
And, okay, so what number are we at right now?
Yeah, it was five. We have one more. Is supporting fair conditions for food and farm workers.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's a big deal. That's a huge deal. But, you know, it's funny. This is where the country's fighting itself, especially over immigration. We don't want people coming in and over our borders, and yet we're not willing to go harvest.
Or so, pay them fairly.
Right. It's just, it's, you know. I don't even want to go down that road. So, yeah, okay, I agree with that. All right, so Mindful Mouthfuls is next Saturday and Sunday. What exactly is going to happen there in Elgin?
Okay, on Saturday, the mayor of Elgin is going to be reading a proclamation to Food Day at 11 o'clock on Saturday, and thankfully to him and City Council. And then we're trying to be very sustainable in Elgin, and we are succeeding. We're moving forward, okay, on all of it. Then Dr. Jaina will actually be speaking about the healing powers of nature.
Dr. Who?
Dr. Jaina.
Who is?
She is the doctor. She is the owner of Simple Balance Holistic Center.
Okay. I'm just making sure people know that because... they probably don't.
Yeah, right. I'm just throwing her name out there, right? It's Dr. Jaina Gonzaga.
Okay.
And that's her full name. And she's the one that has written the webinar for a simple food curriculum, which she's making free at no charge to the, you know, and community at large. And so she will be speaking about, you know, the healing powers of nature. And then after that, we're having tastings with all of the, not all of, but a lot of organized group of farmers, organic farmers that have are graciously coming and sharing some of their bounty with us. And so we can get to sample it and taste how it tastes straight from the farm. Most of it picked that morning. We're going to have jams and veggies and all sorts of good stuff and honeys and breads that are baked with sustainable grains grown in Illinois. And we'll have a couple local restaurants who will be sharing their food, some raw food and some other organic, locally made food. Let's see what else. We also have the movie, the movie Ingredients. We'll be started at 12:30, and we'll be watching that for the rest of the day. And the same thing basically will be happening on Sunday, aside from the fact that the mayor won't be there. But we will be having the tastings again, and we will be doing the movie Nourish instead of Ingredients.
Awesome.
And there's no charge to get in. We're requesting, though, that if everybody wants to just bring some canned food or jarred food, we are giving it to Feeding Greater Elgin.
Okay.
Food bag.
What I would see, now that brings up an interesting point. You know, canned food, jarred food, a lot of that's junk. You know, a lot of it's packed with sodium, and a lot of it's, you know, you got BPAs in the cans and things like that.
That's all they will accept. Yeah, you know, they have rules and guidelines right now that, you know, hopefully will be changed. I remember one year I made an abundance of food for Thanksgiving, and I had so much left over. I mean, some really good food, and I wanted to bring it to them. And they weren't able to accept it.
Well, I understand that part of it, but there's got to be a better way. There's got to be we got to meet halfway on that, so we can get good food to people and still protect their health. I mean, obviously the health laws dictate that there are certain things you can't do, but the same old junk out of the cans and boxes is not helping people who need food. They need to eat healthy.
I agree. It is hypocritical. There is a the Elgin Garden Network that grows food, and there are woes that are giving to feed the hungry. And, you know, you're right. I think we'll probably figure out something to do with the farmers. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, it bothered me from the beginning, but I thought it was at least a good way to, you know, to get some of that food to them. I added the jarred food, you know, for preserves and things like that, that maybe people will bring in. But the canned food, you're right. It's, you know, why should we be promoting that?
But it's a difficult thing. I can't say anything right now, but I'm working on something here at the station, and we might be addressing that problem, too. And if we are, I'll let you know. Well, Kathleen Hare, thank you so much for being here. All the information is at my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, and you can find out about the big Food Day celebration, 2 days in Elgin, Mindful Mouthfuls, Back to Nature Food Day, Fair and Tasting. Is there a website that you could send people directly to?
Yes, it is foodday.weebly.org.
Weebly, and how do you spell Weebly?
Weebly is W for world, E, B as in boy, L, Y. .com.
Might be easier just to go to my website, but all right. Thank you, Kathleen. We will talk soon, I hope.
All right. Thanks very much.
And good luck. Have fun next week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See you later. Bye-bye.
The Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. 773-838-9278 is the phone number. We stream live at MikeNovak.net or ChicagosProgressiveTalk.com. We podcast. You can go to the show afterward. If you miss part of it and you want to hear all of it, you can, or if you want to just hear 30 seconds, mm-hmm. That's fine too. Whatever you want.
Yep, it's there.
And
you can like us on Facebook.
Facebook. And speaking of Facebook, I just got a message from Sandy Seberg. On Facebook, he says, Heather, can you or Mike like us on our fan page? I have separated my personal page and the Purple Cow Organics LLC page.
Ooh, so, Purple Cow's good stuff.
So everybody type in Purple Cow right now who's listening to the show. Let's see if we can get a big bump for Sandy Seberg at Purple Cow Organics.
We want the new unreleased Purple Cow only available here, or do we want just Purple Cow? Or Purple Cow, Purple Cow, Purple Cow, Purple Cow Creamery.
Sandy, let us know which one. Okay,
there's quite a few Purple Cows,
wow,
apparently.
Okay, well, wait a second. Let's see. I think Purple Cow Organics LLC is the one you're looking for. So keep scrolling. Wow. Oh, no, it wouldn't be. Type in the whole thing, Purple Cow Organics LLC, and see what comes up. Do-do-do-do-do. There it is.
Ta-da!
We're going to like
it. I just liked it.
On yours or mine?
On mine.
All right,
go like it
on the Mike Novak Show. That would be cool. And everybody else, go Purple Cow Organics LLC. Thanks for writing, Sandy. I'm glad you're listening. As you put your garden to bed for the winter, you can tuck it in and say nighty-night with some well-earned nutrients from Back to Nature Cotton Burr Compost. Back to Nature is rich in protein, which is the primary food source for beneficial soil organisms, those little guys that aerate the soil with their tunneling and convert nutrients into a form that plants can use. At this time of year, adding a layer of cotton burr compost to your garden beds will lay the groundwork, so to speak, for a spectacular spring. Back to Nature has been composting since 1979, and they are the largest producers of composted cotton burrs in the southwestern United States. Find out more about cotton burr compost and other fine products from Back to Nature at backtonaturecompost.com. Dr. Wally at Pesci's and I both love their products, so give them a try. Back to Nature is available at Countryside Garden Center in Crystal Lake, Illinois, Paradigm Gardens in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, Gethsemane Garden Center in Chicago. Back to Nature. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hey, by the way, Sandy, Heather said, you got to like us too.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the Mike Novak show. Let's see if we can get a bump in the Mike Novak show today. You know, maybe if we get a bump, we'll get over the next 100 numbers. So that would be cool.
Well, Purple Cow has 113 presently, and the Mike Novak show page has 388.
Come on, we can do better
than that.
We can do a lot better than that. I know we can. Here are some facts from the care of trees. A recent study shows that deciduous plants, especially trees, absorb about a third more of air-polluting chemicals than previously thought. In 1 year, trees in the Chicago region removed approximately 17 tons of carbon monoxide, 93 tons of sulfur dioxide, 93 tons of nitrogen dioxide, and 210 tons of ozone. That's what the trees in the Chicago region removed from our air. The research, led by scientists at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, says that trees reduce pollution by actively removing it from the atmosphere. Leaf stomata, which are the pores on the leaf surface, take in polluting gases, which are then absorbed by water inside the leaf. So if you want to contribute to healthy air, make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
You can have a beautiful lawn and be kind to the environment, too. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. A few simple changes in your lawn care practices, like using Milorganite Goof-Proof Organic Fertilizer, can result in a carpet of green safe for your kids and pets. Start by raising the mowing height of your lawn, if you haven't done so already. Taller grass is better able to compete with the weeds. Mow often, removing only one-third of the total height, and leave the clippings on the lawn. Consider using a push or electric mower. It's good for the waistline and the environment. Further improve your lawn's health and greatly reduce weed problems with proper fertilization. Milorganite's organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn your lawn, even in hot, dry weather. Plus, you don't need to water it in. And the non-staining iron helps maintain the deep green color, even in the heat of summer. So join the professionals and home gardeners who've trusted Milorganite for over 80 years. Use Milorganite for better results naturally. Available where garden supplies are sold.
You know, I was out late Saturday night, but it was because I was
partying like you were 18 again?
No, I was partying like I was coming back from Traverse City and doing a garden talk. Oh, my goodness. Let's bring in Rick DeMaio, our meteorologist. So I schlepped back from Traverse City last night, Rick, in about...
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but 36 hours, I went out there and came back. That's like 700 miles.
Yeah, that's a lot. Now, what were you guys talking about? Purple Cow, Purple Monkey, what is that?
Purple Cow Organics, LLC.
Oh, it sounds like a form of LSD I took back in the late 70s.
You know, you'll never be elected president with admissions like that.
All the good hippies became farmers, so there you go.
I think it's the same kind of stuff that Rick Perry took a couple of days ago when he gave that talk about oil in Pennsylvania. Did you hear him?
Oh, God.
I missed it. I've been grateful.
What a maroon.
What an ultra maroon.
How much further does he want to sink in the polls by just going out and saying, we need to forget about all environmental issues and just to drill the hell out of the United States to get oil?
Well, that's what most of them are saying anyway. I'm sorry, but the environment is taking a back seat to everything else. You know, this is not new, Rick. You've seen this. You and I, Rick, have seen this for decades, where the economy goes a little slow, and right away it's, well, we can't afford environmental protections. Yeah. We can't afford to stay healthy.
Yeah,
and it's just the same old.
go on. I'm sorry. I interrupted you there. Go
well,
ahead.
The point I was going to make is that, and then this week in his budget speech, Rahm Emanuel disbanded the Chicago Department of the Environment.
Yeah, I know. I saw that, too.
Yeah, it was really disappointing. Very, very disappointing. And he says, well, don't worry. We'll spread it among the agencies. You know what? That is a way to bury environmental concerns and to make them go away. Well, they don't go away, but the solutions go away.
Mike, that's exactly what happened with FEMA when the Department of Homeland Security was developed back in 2001. FEMA was by itself, and they basically took FEMA and buried it in the DHS. And then all of a sudden, when Katrina came along, no one really knew how to operate FEMA. And then all of a sudden, they said, you know what? I think we kind of need to put FEMA back on its own feet. And you know what? As much as these politicians think they're correcting something, they're just putting a Band-Aid on a six-inch wound that continues to hemorrhage. And, yeah, you know, I think we kind of saw it when Susan Malik McKenna was, you know, axed a couple of, what was it, about 6 months ago?
Well, she was summarily dismissed. She was the real environmentalist the Department of the Environment. And I still am planning to get her on the show. So she, I bet she's got some opinions about it right now, Suzanne Malik McKenna, who is the DOE chair or commissioner. And then they put a, I'm sorry, political hack in her place. And you kind of knew right then that the department was going to be gutted. And then it became official this week. So
what Bush 1 and Bush 2 did with FEMA, they basically put their political hacks in there. The guy who ran Bush 2's campaign in the state of Texas became the director of FEMA. I mean, he had absolutely no experience running it, and the only person that did do a great job over the course of the last 20 years was James Witt, who Clinton put in because he realized the importance of having someone who actually knew something about emergency management. So, yeah, I agree. Everything takes a backseat in these situations.
And it's really distressing. What's even more distressing is, as I mentioned earlier in the show, climate variability is causing a weird thing to happen, which is the days are getting darker faster. And I don't know what's going on.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I had my students do, this was at Oakland Community College, I had them do a really neat project last week where they looked at different cities around the United States. And they had to look at the normals, compare that with sunrise and sunset data. And someone said, well, in November is when we go, you know, when we, you know, turn the clocks back. He says, that's when we get up an hour earlier, right? And I kind of looked at him, I said, if you want to, you can, but that's not really what happened.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
the thing about it is his girlfriend's in the class as well, and she kind of looked at him, gave him one of those really hard elbows in the side, like, you idiot.
Well, you know, what has happened, though, in the last 2 weeks since we talked was the temperature or the weather went from beautiful to pretty much fall-like. In fact, we got a question here. Samuel from Oak Park.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oak Lawn,
wants to know when the tomatoes need to be brought inside. Are you thinking this week, maybe?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Probably tonight or tomorrow night, because this is when we get into our first real cool spell. Probably beginning Tuesday night, Mike. You know, it's interesting because I'll be working Channel 2 this evening, and I got some really interesting climate data, not so much on frost and freeze, but when is the average date of us actually hitting 40 degrees? Now, we also have a climatological norm, but we also like to look at the last 30 years. And really, the average date around here is kind of right around October 6th or October 7th. We haven't gotten there yet, and we'll probably get there maybe Wednesday, which is about 11 to 12 degrees later than normal, because we've had some mild weather recently. So the tomatoes really took a hit, I think, in the month of September, Mike. Wouldn't you agree with me on that?
The month, it was like bonus time for, you know, we early on, it was cold, but, you know, if you got through that cool weather at the beginning, the last few weeks have been just really great to get a little extra out of your tomatoes.
Right, but I guess what I was referring to was those cool, wet period in between about the second and third week of September. Everything just seemed to kind of slow down a little bit.
Well, it did. I mean, it did. It didn't knock them flat like, you know, I mean, how cold are we going to get to 40 this week? Is that what you said?
I think overnight lows definitely in the upper 30s to near 40 degrees.
Okay, well, yeah, then, Samuel, I'd say rescue your tomatoes and put them in a bag. Put them in a paper bag with an apple or two, and they will ripen up. We've been doing that at home with some of our tomatoes, and it really, you know what? You'll still get the good flavor. I'm kind of surprised that, you know, you think, oh, well, there's no sun, it's not going to ripen. It's amazing what ethylene gas can do.
And that's why they shouldn't have the flowers by the apples in the grocery store, right? Because of the ethylene?
Exactly.
Okay.
I like that. Ethylene gas.
Well, yeah. Well, that's true. That's what apples emit
this gas.
Called ethylene gas, and it helps fruits ripen. It makes them ripen faster. Mm-hmm. It also makes flowers ripen faster, which is why you should not put your apples near your vase with flowers because the flowers will go faster.
Wow, that's great. That's something I should have tried back in the late 70s. You never know what would have happened, right?
Coulda, shoulda, whatever.
Yeah, you know.
I'm going to the Bears game tonight. Should I have gloves and a hat and the whole nine yards or what?
No, Heather, I don't think so. I think this is one of those patterns. Matter of fact, I was looking at the satellite radar composite just a few minutes before the show, and bulk of the rain has actually now passed off to the south and east. We may get an errant sprinkle between now and around noontime, but I think the bulk of the precipitation is gone. So what we have out there right now, just to kind of lead into the forecast, Mike, because I know we don't have a lot of time, but generally mostly cloudy, some sun this afternoon, and game time temperatures, Heather, probably in the low 50s, maybe a west wind at about 10 to 15 miles per hour, but absolutely no chance of rain tonight. And then we get into a dry pattern, Mike, for both tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, and probably early Wednesday, I think would generally rain free, although there'll be an increase in clouds each day because the atmosphere becomes progressively cooler. And we could even see some lake effect rain showers Wednesday night and into Thursday. Today's temperature is generally low 60s, which is just a touch below normal for this time of the year. Normal high is right around 63 or 64. Tomorrow, probably cooler, probably upper 50s and maybe mid-50s for an afternoon high both Tuesday and Wednesday. Overnight lows, probably in the upper 30s. What you were saying before, Mike, about the tomatoes is definitely something that you want to definitely take care of. And then we kind of stay somewhat in between the 50s and 60s as we head into the end of the week. And I was looking at some long-range stuff, Mike, and definitely something that we've seen around here the last couple of years is a sharp change into much, much colder weather for the end of October into early November. And I hate to say it, but the dreaded four-letter word snow, wet snow, could actually be introduced into the forecast sometime between the 26th and about the 30th of October. It's going to get that cold around here.
26th to the 30th of October, maybe snow. Write that down.
On Halloween? Oh, man.
No. This is just a slight chance of a little bit of wet snow.
Oh, okay.
But I have to say, though, this is definitely going to be probably the weekend to see spectacular fall foliage around here. Wouldn't you say, Mike, this probably would have been the better fall?
It's been fabulous. I drove to Michigan twice in the last couple of weeks, and it was just gorgeous. All right,
and
Rick.
I sent you a couple of websites. You can post them on your homepage.
I will do that because they're cool. They show some great statistics. We'll talk to you next week, Rick. Maybe we'll talk about snow forecast for the winter, okay?
Okay, we'll do it. Talk to you then.
Take care.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
So,
I actually met the lead singer of Rusted Root because of this show at the Garden Walk, the Sheffield Garden Walk, 2 summers ago.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I know you're a huge fan.
I like Rusted Root very much.
They're very good.
They are.
I like Rusted Root
as
well.
And they played a farmer's market that weekend. Like, they played the show on Saturday and the day before. They went to, like, just a local's farmer's market, got off the bus, and started playing. So, we're fans of Rusted Root on the Mike Novak Show.
I like the idea of just getting off the bus and you just unpack your instrument. Start right there.
Yep.
Let's start playing on the bus.
Oh, and you know they got some nice goodies to take home, which has got to be a nice relief from road food. I can't imagine. I did ask him, I said, how do you guys maintain a healthy diet and stuff on the road? And he goes, you don't. Because it's too hard.
No, I got to tell you something. And even the past 2 days, 3 days, As I mentioned with Rick DeMaio when he was on just a few minutes ago, the last couple of days, I did a talk in Traverse City, Michigan, which was really cool. Really, really nice people. I was glad that I had the opportunity to go up there, and they're in the process of you'll appreciate this, Eric Grossnickel, who is in the studio with us, and we'll get to him in a second. I was speaking to the Botanic Garden Society of Northwestern Michigan, and they're putting a new arboretum together in Traverse City. And, you know, that's always difficult. You got to get the land. You got to get the people to put together. You got to raise money. And the problem was they asked me to speak on a Saturday. And I do the show on Sunday, and Saturday's usually the day I'm doing all the prep work. And you know, Heather knows that the drill was just like, don't bother me on Saturday.
It's absolutely necessary.
Unless it's absolutely. Don't ask me to come to dinner. Don't ask
me. Mother Earth is going to show up. Gaia in her true form is going to walk through the door. Unless it's that important, don't leave. Don't bother.
Exactly, because I'm not going to go. Yeah, you going to invite me to something?
Or Snoop Dogg shows up with some rutabagas.
Well, okay, if Snoop Dogg shows up, that's a different story. I thought, oh man, that's a long trip, and I have to be back on Sunday. And I tried to set it up so I could work out of a station in Traverse City, but that didn't really happen because I was hoping I could broadcast from there and do something that we do it down here. And you would have gotten to sit in the big chair.
Again. I like the big chair.
But I thought, then I realized that's not going to work. So I said, okay, I'm just driving up there. I'm driving back in 36 hours. And that's 700 miles both ways. And now the good news is the colors were spectacular.
That I believe.
It was. Now, not so much on Friday when I went up because it was cloudy and rainy, but coming back yesterday, oh my God! Yeah. I decided I'm coming along Lake Michigan on Route 31, which goes down the western side of the state. Just stunning.
Yeah,
just stunning.
I love it when the sunlight just like comes beaming through the leaves that are still on, it's just
And you know, it's my home state. I love Michigan. I think it's I'm not crazy about their
government. Not a real fan of your sports teams right now, Mister. Not at all.
No,
just
because the Tigers got blown up yesterday, and I do like what the Lions are doing.
That I don't like. See, the Tigers, I wouldn't have minded so much. It's the football that's bugging me.
See, that was the thing. Everybody wants to root for the Tigers, but not the Lions. Well, I'm rooting for the Lions now. They're my team now.
I'm not saying your team's not See, I don't know how I feel about that, because you left there for Chicago in 1978, mister. So by now, that's
yeah,
just...
Yeah, but your sports... You know, I just feel like the poor Lions...
They are so,
and you know what? They're going to get beat up by Green Bay when they face them. So that's going to be ugly.
But
and,
see, that's like the lesser of two evils in my mind. Can they both lose that game?
We want the Lions to beat Green Bay.
I just have a serious problem with being like really bad in the NFC North. Like if we don't win tonight, and I'm going to the game, so I'm going to scream and yell and root them on. I can't be the last team in the NFC North. My sports ego just can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So. I don't know. I have really conflicted feelings.
The only thing stopping us right now is that the Vikings seem to be worse than we are.
That's what I'm counting on.
It's what we'll find out tonight,
won't
we?
I guess so. And I'll be sitting there in my ready for my 50-degree lakefront weather, according to Mr. DeMaio.
I'm predicting now for the Bears. Earlier, a couple of weeks ago, I was thinking they'd win 4 games. Now, I think they might win 8. Possibly.
Probably
7 is what I'm thinking now.
I just can't be last in the NFC North. I just can't. I just can't.
And
I do would like to see the Lions beat up Green Bay. I said it. I won't say it again.
Why? There's nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing.
I have friends in Detroit who are probably listening, just like recording everything I'm saying, and they're going to, send it back to me later.
If we have any fans listening in Detroit, 773-838-9278. If you're listening in Detroit.
Yeah.
Give us a holler.
Yeah.
And talk to us about, they're sad today.
Because
the Tigers looked really bad yesterday.
They did. So. They got spanked, didn't they?
They got spanked good. So, one of the things we just got a couple of tweets that I want to call your attention to. And one is from Tom who tweeted, I didn't know this, today is National Feral Cat Day. Cities have to stop euthanizing and practice trap, neuter, and release. Well, that's a hard thing to do, but it's got to be done. We're as I mentioned in my talk in Traverse City yesterday, we've talked about it on this show. I asked the folks. I said, you know what? The number one cause of bird deaths is in the United States, and it's cats. And half a billion birds per year, or in that ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
And sometimes it's because people, they let their cats out and they...
Oh, I know certain parts of Illinois, and a friend of mine had a place in Hanover Park. The neighborhood was riddled with feral cats. Riddled.
Well, our neighborhood is from time to time. It sort of ebbs and flows. And I will talk about this on another show. I will say that Kathleen and I have been adopted by a cat that was in our backyard.
So the cat chose you.
The cat chose us.
Mm-hmm. Smart yeah. cat.
I don't know. You should see. You should see what I do with it.
Oh no! Do you feed this after you torture it?
Oh yeah, I'm always
okay.
Yeah. But she was in our yard, and we did. I'm glad Tom wrote this. And today, being National Feral Cat Day, we assumed the cat was feral, and we took it in a cage to paws. And had all the tests done and got it neutered. Turns out the cat was pregnant.
You got it neutered while it was pregnant?
Well, they did the thing and then neutered the cat. I mean, you know, weren't...
So did she deliver the litter?
No. She was probably just early on.
Okay.
You know, we don't need more cats in the world.
Sadly, no. And
we
if
don't.
You do, you should go to a shelter and you should adopt.
Exactly. So we did all this stuff and we were going to... either let it go or give it to somebody. And then we brought it into the house and, you know, we couldn't leave it in a cage outside all day. So we brought it in and put a little kitty litter. We happened to have kitty litter in the house because I was using it for traction for the car over the winter, last winter. And we put it in a little bucket and, not a bucket, but a little pan. And she went right in and did it. It's like she was already trained. I went, oh, this is not a feral cat. Okay, mm-hmm. This is a cat that got loose, but was living in our yard for over a month.
Yeah.
You know, and I was doing my best not to bond.
Are you attached? Do you have a kitty cat now, Mr. Novak?
It lives in my house.
You have a cat. You're a cat owner. You have a pet cat.
I know it, but here's the problem. I might not have a pet cat because I've started sneezing an awful lot.
Oh, no. Yeah. Are you allergic?
I don't know. I think I am.
Oh, no.
So this is tough. This is a really tough thing. But the point is, we did the right thing. We felt like we did the right thing. We got the thing neutered, and we got it out where it's not going to make more kitty cats. And now we'll see whether the kitty cat can stay in the house. And I'm not a cat guy. You got to understand. But... it's a pretty cute cat.
Cats are... See, I would have a cat. The place I'm moving into, the people who live on the first floor are highly allergic, so I can't. It'd just be... It would be...
So you would have a cat, huh?
I would have a cat. I'd have a cat, a dog, the whole nine yards. I grew up with lots of animals.
And finally, before we get to Eric, and thank you for being patient, Eric. I really appreciate it. We got Carrie Dale. She tweets, I'm not even all that certain what a rutabaga is.
Well, it's my new code word after Snoop, I'll say that.
Well,
rutabaga.
Hey, I got the rutabaga.
I got the rutabaga.
Hey, I got the mutts.
What you got?
I got the rutabaga.
The rutabaga.
All right, well, rutabaga. Do you know what a rutabaga is, Eric?
I sure do.
I think it's a type of turnip, isn't it?
I have no idea what a rutabaga is, but it's fun to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rutabaga. You know, that's one of the things actors are supposed to say when you're doing a background scene on stage where you're supposed to hear the crowd talking but not understand anything. Uh-huh. It's one of the things that actors say. They go,
rutabaga. Interesting. Yeah. Things you never knew. Is it some kind of turnip?
Very good. Right? The rutabaga, Swede turnip, sometimes it's called, or yellow turnip, and it's Brassica napobrassica, or Brassica napus, variation napobrassica, or Brassica napus subspecies rapifera, I guess. My Latin is not what it should be. Is a root vegetable that originated as a cross, and I did not know this, as a cross between the cabbage and the turnip. The roots are prepared for food in a variety of ways, and its leaves can also be eaten as a leaf vegetable. Now, rutabaga is the common American and Canadian term for the plant. It comes from the old Swedish word rotabagi, or rotabaga, simply meaning root bag. Is there a difference between a root bag and a dirt bag? Swede is a preferred term used in England, Wales, Australia, New Zealand, and many other parts of the world that use British English as a standard. The first known printed reference to the rutabaga comes from the Swiss botanist Gaspard Bauhin in 1620, where he notes that it was growing wild in Sweden. It is often considered to have originated from Scandinavia or Russia. It is said to have been widely introduced to Britain around the end of the 18th century, but it was recorded as being present in the royal gardens in England as early as 1669 and described in France in 1700. The botanical history species is commonly known as Swede or rutabaga has had a rich taxonomic history. The earliest account comes from the Swiss botanist Gaspard Bauhin, who wrote about it in his 1620 Pro Domus, Brassica Napro Brassica, was first validly published by Carl Linnaeus in his 1753 work, Carl Linnaeus, of course, and blah, 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 blah. It's roasted to be served with meat dishes. It can be cooked in a variety of ways as a major ingredient in the ever-popular Christmas dish, Swede casserole. Oh, yeah, we have that all the time. I know. Eric's going, huh?
What is that? It was great with lutefisk, I think.
That's it. Yeah. So it can be uncooked and thinly julienned as a side dish or in a salad, baked or boiled. Finns use rutabagas in most dishes that call for any root vegetable. Those crazy Finns. There you go. So there's, you got your education on rutabaga. And I didn't even know. A cross between the cabbage and the turnip. In the studio, having nothing to do with rutabagas, is Eric Grossnickel from the Greater North Michigan Avenue Association and also from Bartlett Tree Experts. Good to see you, Eric.
Great to see you again, Mike.
We're buddies. We've known each other for a little while. And I'll tell you what, we're going to be talking about the plants in the Magnificent Mile, but if people have a tree question, can they call?
Sure.
773-838-9278, because he's a certified arborist and knows his stuff with Bartlett Tree Experts. Great people, sponsors of one of the sponsors of Tour de Trees. And so it's always good to have them represented on the show. And, of course, one of your colleagues at Bartlett, Scott Jameson, is a regular listener to the program, although I haven't seen him tweeting today. We just got a tweet, by the way, on rutabagas. I got to cook them every Thanksgiving like cooking a truck tire. Okay. Well, that, love them truck tires. Got to add a little salt to it. Maybe some gravy.
Yeah, especially if you have 78 pounds of rutabaga.
So we have just had... Now, did we just do the awards for the landscapes on the Magnificent Mile? How long ago was that?
We just did it on, I think it was September 28th at one of the membership connection meetings.
Okay, cool. So it's not that that long ago.
No.
And you honor a lot. How many total landscapes are there in that area? You know?
That's a good question. There's about 100 or so.
Yeah, that's what I think, because you gave out 47 awards.
Right. Yeah.
So half of them get away. Okay, let's give a lot of awards out. Everybody will be happy. It's like being in school again, you know?
Well, the truth of the matter is that you know, many of the gardens are worthy of getting awards. Mm-hmm. And when we take a look at the garden areas, you know, we go over the course of the year, we do a spring garden walk, a summer garden walk, and a fall garden walk.
Mm-hmm.
And we're able to, you know, judge those the differences from one year to the next, and they're beautiful gardens. They really are.
Well, okay, let's start with that issue. They're beautiful gardens in really a hostile environment. I mean, it doesn't get much more hostile than that because this, as I mentioned earlier in the show, is the place where tourists come, and they might not go to any other part of the city but the Magnificent Mile. So there's lots of traffic. There's salt in the winter. There's concrete and heat island effect. There's compacted soil. There's all the things that are death to plants. And yet these gardens thrive. And I imagine that it has a lot to do with the soil prep.
Well, certainly it does. I think there's a lot of work that goes into deciding what type of plant material to put underneath the tree canopy on Michigan Avenue.
And there's another thing. If you're going to put plants under tree canopy and shade, and we're not even talking, when I talk out in the neighborhoods, if you got shade in your yard, you might have 3-flat shade. You got shade downtown, it's 40-story shade.
Right.
You know,
right.
So maybe sometimes in certain areas, and I would say most of them, you get sun for a couple hours as it goes straight overhead.
Certainly that can be a limiting factor to what you're able to put down there. And so we look to see what type of creativity people have, you know, as the landscape architects and designers of, you know, the landscape contractors. They have a pretty short list on their palette of what they can put in, and it's amazing what they're able to put together.
Well, okay, that's interesting because it doesn't look like it's a short palette. If you go to those gardens along the Magnificent Mile, you see some really exotic stuff. Or is it just that their designs are so good? I mean, when you list the palette, a lot of people will put in tropicals. They're not putting in natives very often. Midwest natives, because they're not going to thrive there. There's just not enough light.
No, and you're talking about the mums earlier. You know, I mean, they're not native, certainly, but they look great.
Yeah, they do. Don't get me wrong. I love mums. Yeah. I think mums are cool. Uh-huh. And, you know, and they do well at this time of year. Yay. Okay.
Right.
But they're not native. What are you going to do? But a lot of the plants that the tropicals that are put in the Magnificent Mile are not natives either, but they look stunning. And you have to give them that slack because, as I said, if you only have 2 hours of sun a day, you're not going to do well with prairie plants. It ain't going to happen.
Right, right. And some of the grasses, they can go in on kind of an annual basis, but we're not going to be able to keep them there throughout the whole season. So.
Right, and the grasses you put in, I imagine they get pulled out, yanked out too.
Yeah.
They can perform because they've got the energy to do that for one season, and then... You know, the winter's going to beat them up, and then you got to move on to something else.
Right. Well, it's become a really, you know, a good, positive, competitive spirit on the avenue for obtaining these awards. And they deserve it. You know, we have a rating system on several different criteria for the gardens that we're looking in the spring, we're looking in the summer.
Well, and what kind of criteria do you use?
Well, we're making sure that, the designs themselves are creative and unique, that the plants that are put in are healthy and abundant. We'd like to see some, you know, linear, nonlinear elements of the design. We'd like to make sure that they have lots of color. You know, being on the avenue, you have, you know, the horizontal areas of the street, and then you've got the vertical of the buildings. We'd like to see some relief there. So the trees certainly do that. But underneath them, you know, we need some nice warmth and color. And I think the tulips look magnificent, you know.
They do.
In the spring. And that's just a wonderful transition from the cold, dreary, dark part of winter into spring. And I think it's, you know, really telling. They put a lot of effort and a lot of expense into making the Magnificent Mile such a, you know, conducive environment for shopping.
That's Eric Grossnickel, co-chair of the Greater North Michigan Avenue Association Public Way Committee. Do you actually live on the Magnificent Mile?
You know what? I don't. I live at, I'm just about 5 blocks north of it on Lakeshore Drive.
So okay.
I'm close by, and I walk the avenue a lot. It's a great place to go. And I really encourage you to get on there and see it right now because it's beautiful with the tree canopy changing its colors. And, you know, the Michigan Avenue Association, Greater North Michigan Avenue Association, spends a lot of time walking that avenue, making sure that not only the plants and trees look great, but also the facades of the buildings and, you know, just the hardscapes that put in, you know, so they look at if there's gum on the sidewalk, that's got to be fixed. You know, there's a lot to
really
go into.
It sounds like Disney World.
Yeah,
you know, they
clean.
Don't even let people chew gum in Disney World, or they try not to do it. They don't sell it. Let me put it that way.
Right.
They don't sell gum at Disney World because they're afraid there'll be gum on the sidewalk.
Well, you know, and we're really lucky, you know, that we're going to be getting a new street. You know, on Michigan Avenue, they're repaving Michigan
Avenue. Oh, that's
right.
That's right.
So
here's my problem. I don't, you know, for 20 years, 25 years, I worked downtown at Gargantua Radio down the dial. And I loved it. I loved going downtown and being on Michigan Avenue because it's where everything's happening, you know? And I kind of miss that. I get down there occasionally, but I forgot. But now that you remind me, yeah, they're fixing the street. And one of the things you mentioned about tulips that's interesting, and part of Michigan Avenue, because there's a lower Michigan, it affects how the tulips grow because cold air and warm air in the pocket below Michigan Avenue, and I forget, I think it actually slows their growth where the lower Michigan is because it's got the cold air that comes up, whereas the other part has got ground underneath it, and that stays warmer. If I'm not mistaken, because I talked to some hort guy who was involved with the plantings on Michigan Avenue, and I'm pretty sure, or maybe it was just my observation, that the ones that come up, you know, by Trib Tower, where you've got a lower Michigan, come up slower. And those are things you don't think, you have to think about when you're planting.
Well, there's several different microclimates within Michigan Avenue. I've got to think that on and off the avenue, depending on the light conditions and about where the wind is coming from, you know, there are different environments where plants are going to react a little bit differently. So,
Let's take a quick phone call. Do you mind?
Sure.
We've got an actual question. We'll go to, is it Ash in Evanston?
Yeah. Hi. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks. I had a couple of questions for the arborist, and if you have time, one for you, Mike. The arborist question is, I read an article. I'm a sustainability guy, and I do a bunch of reading on kind of issues that affect the Midwest. And one article I came across was on climate change and the projections for the Chicago area kind of in the future. And the article was talking about, you know, that we're projected by the end of the century to be our climate's going to be roughly that of Baton Rouge. And so to that extent, Chicago and some other municipalities have started choosing tree species that are for a warmer range.
You know, that's a really good point. I'll tell you, first of all, what I will tell you is that if Rick DeMaio were in on this conversation, my meteorologist, he might take issue with that about the change, radical change. Baton Rouge, he would say, no, I don't think so. I'm speaking for him right now, but I've heard him say things like that, he thinks it's going to be slower than some folks predict. That being said, there is climate variability happening, Eric, you're sort of going, maybe not. Is that what you're thinking?
If it were moderate, let's say it wasn't Baton Rouge, but it was one zone or two zones warmer than it is now.
Right.
And, I mean, knowing for the, allowing for the fact that trees last, you know, 50, 100 plus years.
Not in the city so much. You know, they can in the city, but on a parkway, I don't think so. You know, what the average life is like 7 to 10 years or something like that,
yes,
Eric?
This is a residential application.
Yeah.
Certainly the trees that are in the parkway or in the, more specifically in the tree pits have a shorter life.
Right.
Then, you know, the more soil and more area that you can give the trees will give them a longer.
I saw some, I was doing some judging for the Mayor's Landscape Awards this year, and there was, not a tree pit, but what would you call it? The landscape area, parkway that had some soil, and there were some beautiful swamp white oaks. They looked so healthy. I just couldn't believe how good they looked, and they were thriving, and they were 20 feet tall. But let's get back to the question here that Ash has. What's Bartlett doing about this? Do you talk about this at all and changing species up a little bit to reflect perhaps a little bit of warming in the area?
You know, it does come up. However, you know, climate change and, you know, the variability as you're talking about is something that we just keep our eyes on. I don't know if there's anything really you can do about it. You know, the trees have an amazing ability to adapt over time. And I don't know if it's going to be a short period that we are changing our hardiness zone to a little bit warmer or if it's going to go back. I defer probably to the meteorologist on some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But, You know, we just try to pick plants that do well in certain areas. And obviously we take into consideration, you know, generally where we are in the Midwest, but then more specifically on each neighborhood and along the lake or, you know, in an environment where there's no sun and it gets colder and things like that.
Well, that was the point you were starting to make, which is microclimates.
Right.
I mean, you can have areas around Chicago, some of, you know, if you're by the lake, it's going to be a little warmer. If you're out in Sugar Grove, it's certainly going to be cooler. And those things aren't going to change. Those variabilities will remain the same, even if the overall temperature gets a little higher. But so what you're saying, Eric, at this point, to address Asha's question, is that it's too early to say we can't plant this tree anymore, or we should be planting this one from a warmer zone.
Yeah, as far as weather and variability and heat, yeah, it's something we need to take a look at over a period of time. It's not something we can make decisions on. We can think about it right now. You know, we luckily enough, we were an award recipient from the Greater North Michigan Avenue Association for doing an inventory on the avenue. And one of the things we're doing is that when I do the garden walks, I'm evaluating the gardens, but also taking a look at the trees. And in that inventory, we're taking the time to see how certain plants are doing on the avenue.
Well, so, you know, if I had to think of it, and I think about the Magnificent Mile, and what it is, one of the questions I wanted to ask you is about the inventory.
Yeah.
What pops into my head is, well, they're all honey locusts, so what's the inventory?
Yeah, well, that's funny. There's about 14 different species of trees on the avenue.
And that's the surprising. Yeah, no, and I knew there weren't just, but my overall impression is that, boy, there's a lot of honey locusts there.
Yeah, the first thing that goes into my mind is when I'm on the avenue is those beautiful elm trees in front of the Grand Lux Cafe and the Disney Store. If you want to look at a really good block on Michigan Avenue as far as, you know, just a very, very warm, friendly environment, and go to those areas.
And are these trees that have survived the Dutch elm disease?
They seem to have survived it. You know, and there's been many construction projects throughout the years that, you know, where they're redoing buildings, and we have to do tree protection and make sure that those beautiful trees get to stay on the island.
Well, I'm going
to
get back to that question of the inventory, but Ash, so in answer to your first question, it looks like in terms of, you know, the way Bartlett handles it, and Bartlett's an international company, they're keeping their eye on it, but it's too early right now to say one way or the other that, you know, we can plant this tree or we can't plant that tree.
Yeah, it's
got it. Fair enough. Yeah. And then one other quick one is I'm looking for, if you happen to know a resource that's like a maybe it's an online resource that is a planting calendar where you could select a suite. And you know, I'm trying to offer this for customers who want to put in a victory garden, but maybe they don't have that knowledge. That knowledge is lost to them about planting times and other issues associated with maintaining a small residential garden. Are either of you aware of a resource where you can kind of go online, select, I'm going to plant, you know, tomatoes and these sorts of berry bushes, and it'll give you a planting calendar.
I am, you know what, one of the things I got a couple of years ago from my friend Jennifer Brennan, who works up at the Chalet Nursery in Wilmette, is she has this little card where it's a little like a slide card when you have dates on it and it tells you what things to plant when. Now, I don't know if it's available there or anyplace else. Heather, were you, because I'm, you know, I could look for one of these calendars, and right off the top of my head, I don't know. So what I'm going to do, Ash, is try to track that down. Here's what I want you to do. Send me an email.
Absolutely.
Mike@mikenowak.net. And
that's Nowak.
And I would love, you know, I know there's some great veggie sites because Illinois Extension has a great vegetable site. And let me put this, I'm going to get the exact address on that because we'll start. It's called the Illinois Vegetable Garden Guide. And that is at web.extension.illinois.edu/vegguide, V-E-G-G-U-I-D-E. So that's web.extension.illinois.edu. illinois.edu/vegguide. And I'll tell you what, Heather, why don't you put that up on our Facebook, on the Mike Novak Show Facebook page. And
great.
And I'll leave it here so you can get the URL. So that starts you off with good information, because that's I love those sites at the Illinois Extension. But in terms of actual dates, let me track it down.
Thanks. Appreciate it, guys. And I'll shoot you that email.
All right, great. Thanks for listening, and thanks for calling. Appreciate it. The Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, in the studio with us, Eric Grossnickel, who's with Bartlett Tree Experts. He's also the co-chair of the Greater North Michigan Avenue Association Public Way Committee, and they just had their awards. We should mention who got the top award for that, and we'll get back to the tree study in a second, but I don't want to let this slip away.
Well, good. I wanted to mention also that I co-chair the committee with Kevin Stanley of U.S. Equities, and that's who won the award. I believe it was 669 North Michigan Avenue won the President's Award. So they did an amazing job. They have consistently good plantings and new and inspired ideas every single year.
And by the way, your colleague is listening today, Scott Jamison.
Hi, Scott.
And
we engrossed him with the rutabaga conversation.
Oh, the rutabaga?
Oh, yeah, we hooked him. Rutabaga, line, and sinker.
All right, I want everybody to, all at the same time, do the conversation. Okay, we are the actors on stage. We're not the focus. We're in the background, and we're at a party. And the main characters on stage are having the dialogue, but in the background you hear rutabaga, rutabaga,
rutabaga, rutabaga, rutabaga.
Not so loud, Eric. Bring it down a little bit.
Rutabaga, 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 rutabaga. That works. That actually works.
It's a rickety rutabaga.
I am thoroughly impressed.
Rhombozoid.
And you thought it was just a turnip.
There's the quote of the week. And you thought it was just a turnip. So anyway, Scott writes, oh boy, 30 years the gardens, and he puts the gardens in quotations, on the Magnificent Mile consisted of lawn and little plastic white chains keeping people off the turf.
Wow, has that changed?
I know.
Isn't it amazing?
It is amazing. And somebody else writes, let's see, who's that? That's Snappy J Dog writes, I assumed that the gardens were all done by the same entity since many of them get changed out at the same time. All right, let's talk about that. I mean, who's designing them? And is there a signal for when they're supposed to get changed out, or is it up to each individual landscaper?
Well, I think it coincides a little bit with the, you know, the fashion time, so when, you know, when it's going into fall season, when the clothes are changing in the stores. I you know, it may be just around the time that we're going out there and evaluating them. Might be a time that people just kind of know that their new gardens have to be
well
in.
But you evaluate them at different times of the year?
We do it three times a year. We do it in the spring, summer, and fall. And this year we're actually ending up doing a winter garden walk, because a lot of the properties, you know, there's not a lot to do in the gardens per se, but you know, above them, you know, just great to see some color and some, you know, lights and other things that, you know, very festive. Obviously, we have the lights on the trees and things like that for the light celebration. But we go around this year and we're going to evaluate what property owners are putting out the extra effort to make, you know,
so many of them do. And the thing about they do in the winter is then they add lights.
Right.
And they add, you know, these various art objects that get covered with snow, and it's so romantic.
It is romantic.
It's so romantic.
No, I mean, did you think about
Wait, I feel like spending money right now. I'm just getting this urge.
You know, a little bit of glug or a little bit of eggnog,
exactly.
And a little bit of light.
Stop
you know.
In.
Eggnog, schmegnog, rum.
But that warm glow coming off the trees, you know, it's still that same environment that you get in the spring. You know, you almost forget how cold it is outside.
I'm not a fan of cold and snow in winter, but I do love it when you walk out and you get those tree canopies that are all encased in the ice, and you're going down the street and they're, you know, they sort of arc the street or the sidewalk, and the sun hit. It's beautiful, but it's cold.
by the way, J.A. Frederiff tweets, background noise, it's called general murmur. Rutabegan, the rutabegas would go away, is what he writes. I'm sorry about that.
Not a fan, apparently. Must have been forced to eat them as a child. You can't leave the table until you finish, young man.
So every building hires whoever they want to do. I imagine there are, you list a number of landscapers. So there's only so many landscapers in the world, so I'm sure that some do multiple landscapes along the Magnificent Mile.
I'm sure, and they're challenged to have a unique, a garden for each one of those properties. There's a very finite canvas that you have to work with. So, there's some consistency in the plant palette we had talked about a little bit before, but the variability of the different vendors that put in the landscapes. And you can tell the difference, after you walk down the avenue. You can see some consistency.
You can almost tell who the designer is by what's there.
Right. Well, the committee that does the evaluations, ranges from executives in the construction business to, executives in real estate. Mm-hmm. Also, we've got some landscape architects and landscape contractors that are working on the avenue. And they abstain from voting on the properties that they work on. But, it's a good group of people so that those evaluations are, letting us know who stepped up to the plate and made something look good for the avenue.
And I should note that, did we say the winner was 669 North Michigan Avenue?
I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. And it's managed by U.S. Equities Realty, LLC. I've got a couple of its photos on my website, MikeNovak.net. If you go to this week's show, you'll see the photos, and one of them is the tulips you talked about. Are those the Maggie Daly tulips? I wonder.
I don't have the photo. Are they pink?
Yes.
Okay, probably.
Light pink and dark pink.
Yeah, that was a cool introduction this year, is the tulip of Maggie Daly. There was a celebration around that. What a great mayor. And obviously, just having him around and this whole idea of the greening and of the city of Chicago.
We have a question involving the tulip bulbs. When the city gives away the used tulip bulbs in the spring, are they the tulips along Michigan included?
That's a great question. I don't know that.
Another one. J-Dog. She's good. Yeah. She's real good. Yeah, I don't know.
You can get more information by going to my website, MikeNovak.net. I'm fascinated by the whole thing, just the whole idea of because as I mentioned before, they're very difficult spaces. Do you get a lot of complaints about vandalism?
I don't.
Well, no, obviously you don't.
No. It's certainly something over the course of the last couple of years, there's been some instances of graffiti on the facades of the buildings and things like that.
Yeah, but I'm talking about ripping plants out.
It's amazing. I don't think, not really. Consistently,
considering how many thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people walk up and down those blocks.
Well, they're just so beautiful. How would you ever want to touch them?
There's always an idiot who wants to do that.
I'm surprised that there's a few of the gardens that, have things like pumpkins and things like in them. And I'm always wondering, how are these, these raised planters and these elements of design that are above ground, how do they not grow legs and walk off the avenue? I think it's just because people respect and admire, how beautiful they are. And it's just something that you just don't want to touch. So.
Well, I've done planters on streets in Chicago, and it's amazing how often plants disappear from them. It depends where they are and how vulnerable they are. At least in the Magnificent Mile, I think people have a little more respect for what's there. And again, because it's so beautiful, and there's chains and ropes and blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's just it. I mean, plus, if you're down in the loop area and you're walking around with a plant off the avenue, that might be a challenge.
Where'd you get that, Mom? I don't know. It was just sitting there.
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, Eric Grossnickel, thank you so much for coming in, schlepping in all the way down to South Pulaski, because I actually got a tweet that says, I wish the South Pulaski Businessmen's Association would put some gardens in.
Well, if they want some good advice, they can always contact Greater North Michigan Avenue Association. I think it's GNMAA.com.
Good for you. Yeah, get that in there. And again, that information also, I have the link to the association. It is www.gn as in Novak, M as in Michael, AA.com. Or you can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show, and there's a link right there. Thanks again, Eric. We will talk real soon.
Pleasure being here, Mike. Thank you.
Did you know that in our Zone 5, autumn comes in on little cat feet and goes out like a honey badger?
Honey badger don't care. Honey badger don't give a
Yeah, I know. I bet you didn't know that. And the honey badger has already come a-callin'. And we discover in the September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine that our very own Beth Botts, who sat in this very chair last week, is a thief. Yes, she readily admits in a story in the magazine that she steals tree leaves once they have fallen on the ground. I'll bet she's out on the streets of Oak Park at this very moment raking up other people's leaves. She has this crazy notion that tree leaves are good for your garden. Huh, go figure. Well, actually, they are. And you've heard about heirloom plants. What about heirloom bulbs? There's a story about Scott Kuntz from Old House Gardens in Michigan, who's keeping these varieties, some of them hundreds of years old, maybe some of them pop up on Michigan Avenue, from going extinct. Now's the time to order some before the honey badger gets any crankier. And speaking of cranky, there's my column on the inside back page.
Oh, that's nasty.
Exactly. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago, but it's a lot easier if you subscribe. And you can do that by calling 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to chicagolandgardening.com.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
So somebody's busting us for being mean to cats?
Yeah, a lady got mad at me and yelled at me on the phone that we were mean to about cats and that we don't like cats. And I said, ma'am, we just said that you need, if you find a cat, you should get it spayed or neutered.
Or, right.
And she said, well, you said, well, you just wait until you hear what we did to the cat. And I was like, well, he meant that they took it in to get neutered and found out it was pregnant. Like, that's what he meant, like what we did to the cat. And then it was in a cage. I'm like, it's not like you put it in a burlap bag and threw it in the river.
That's an idea.
Stop it. You don't do that to a kitty cat. Now I'm on her side. But
ma'am,
yeah, I got yelled at.
Ma'am, I like my little kitty cat.
Yeah,
okay?
And you want to keep your kitty cat if you're not allergic, right?
As long as I'm not sneezing my head off, I'm probably going to keep the cat.
You should.
Okay.
Pets make life worth living.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Actually, it's several ways that they give back to the Chicagoland community. They support organizations like Openlands Tree Keepers. I'm a tree keeper, and I know that the Care of Trees shows up for every course and teaches average citizens how to make the urban forest healthier. The Care of Trees also works with the City of Chicago Department of the Environment's Green Corps. However, the Department of the Environment's going out of business.
Mm-hmm.
But Green Corps apparently is not, and it's a job training green industry program, which is run out of the Center for Green Technology. The Care of Trees speaks to garden clubs, and it teaches their members how to preserve the greatest plants on the planet. These are just three reasons why you should make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, the Care of Trees, their business is people, and their love for trees.
Make this your best gardening season yet. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. Invest a bit of time now to ensure a bountiful harvest and beautiful landscape throughout the season. And include Milorganite, eco-friendly, all-purpose fertilizer as part of your formula for success. Use Milorganite organic nitrogen fertilizer in all your planting beds. The low-nitrogen, slow-release formula makes Milorganite goof-proof and good for the environment. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Available wherever garden supplies are sold.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give with the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Sustainable food fundamentals. Growing good food that's good for the earth.
Catch a Tory Dory. Taste a bologna, Tony. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
And on our sustainable food fundamentals segment today, we go to the phones to bring in Alyssa Hamilton, who's not just a PhD. Oh, no. She's also a lawyer. How do you have time to do all that studying, Alyssa?
Well, I'm not a practicing lawyer. That was another life.
Ah, and she wrote a book a couple of years ago called Squeezed, what you don't know about orange juice. Now, we just got wind of that last week, a couple of weeks ago, actually. And that was Heather, my producer, sitting next to me here. And she said, hey, look at this article. And it was in something that was published online by Florida Citrus Mutual.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
So you didn't even, you know, and I
didn't know that there have been quite a few articles lately, and I'm not, well, I have an idea of why it's back in the news.
Well, and the point is that you wrote this book 2 years ago.
That's right, yeah.
And you got a lot of press on it. I've been to the website, and you can go to MikeNovak.net, this week's show, and find that. What makes you think that it's back in the press?
Well, there are a lot of claims now. A lot of organizations are voicing concern about misleading advertising, and that's really what a big part of the more recent story of orange juice involves. You know, quite a bit of it's a product that's advertised as fresh and pure. And there are a few chapters in the book devoted to, uncovering the myth of orange juice. It's being advertised as the epitome of everything that's, a glass of goodness. And
well, it's like a day without sunshine.
Yes.
Exactly. And I mean, a few of these more recent, I don't know if you have followed, but, the use of the term, for instance, natural on products.
Yeah, which is so misleading, and it's part of the greenwashing campaign of many companies. And if you hear natural, buyer beware.
Right, exactly. Actually, the Cornucopia Institute they're upset with the use of natural and on specifically cereals that have not been necessarily produced in an organic or any meaningful definition of the word natural in any kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're calling this an abusive marketing tactic. And, a lot of these cereals that they're focusing on contain GMOs or toxic agrochemicals, and so that's
I think right now we're all pretty convinced that cereals are a lost cause.
Well, I guess
they are. I mean,
if you're not making oatmeal, just buying oats and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're not using your own oats that you grew in your backyard,
yeah,
you're probably. I'm sure there's some out there, but by and large, the cereal industry is out of control.
Yeah.
So we go to orange juice, and one of the marketing ploys in orange juice is from concentrate and not from concentrate. And I find it odd that the idea that was started, what was it, Tropicana did the not from concentrate?
That's right. They started, and they came up with that term.
And that meaning that's better than from concentrate, but it's a negative. I mean, it's a weird way to market. Don't you think that you would say not from concentrate to make it sound like it's better than concentrate?
Well, and actually that was part of a big debate when Tropicana was trying to figure out what to do with their product. It really came down to a cost issue. The not from concentrate is essentially it's pasteurized orange juice, and that became much too... It was just a more expensive product, basically because of the storage. You're storing full-strength juice rather than storing concentrate, which obviously is space-saving and, cheaper to store.
All right. I guess the point is, what happens to concentrate and what happens to the not-from-concentrate juice? What's the difference in the process?
Well, the difference, as I just mentioned, not-from-concentrate is pasteurized, so it's stored... It's not concentrated, so it's stored in huge tanks.
But the difference is they suck out the oxygen. Is that
well? That's in the storage process. So in both cases, you're losing flavor. But the difference is that you're, the real difference is that you're paying a premium for a product that is supposed to be fresher and it's not, because what happens is the pasteurized juice is still stored. It's just stored in tanks rather than in frozen concentrate. And so it takes up more space, so the product is more expensive, so companies like Tropicana had to figure out how to get consumers to pay more for their product. And what they hit on was this slogan, not from concentrate, which sounds exactly, actually their marketers didn't like the, Tropicana's marketers did not like that term, because they said, you know, it's exactly what you were saying. It's a negative. No, it's marketing 101, that you don't advertise something as not something.
Why didn't they just call it Wonderlicious?
Yeah, I wonder if that would have.
I'm copywriting that, by the way. You cannot use it after this show, okay? Please.
Right.
But what I guess I'm still, you know, and I apologize. I haven't read your book, and I almost never interview somebody if I haven't read their book.
Right.
But we found out about this, and I said, nah, I got to do this. This is just too interesting. And I want to get a copy of the book. And see exactly what you're talking about. But I'm still, the concentrate, is that, when you have, by concentrate, is that the natural thing? It's just frozen? Or what are they, how are they processing that?
Neither is particularly natural. It's just a different processing technique. They, mm-hmm. they boil it down for a concentrate. So, in both cases, as I mentioned earlier, that you're losing the flavor, and that's where part of what I write about, the flavor industry, comes in, because whether you're boiling it down into concentrate or whether you're putting it in these aseptic storage tanks, which means that what you meant, you also referred to earlier, they strip the oxygen out so that the juice doesn't go bad in these tanks. And when you strip the oxygen out, you also strip the flavor-providing chemicals. So in both cases, the companies, whether it's in-house or they hire an outside flavor company, the same ones that make high-end perfumes and cologne, to add flavor packs back to the juice to restore the flavor of a fresh-squeezed juice.
And these are literally companies like Dior and Calvin Klein?
They're companies that make perfumes and clones for those companies. So,
but they're making flavor packs for orange juice in this case.
Right.
What's in the flavor packs? It's
derived from orange essence and oils. So that's where the big argument is about whether they have to label the addition of these flavor packs. Now there's a section in the book where I write about the regulations, and I can quote what the regulations say, but essentially my argument is that it goes against the spirit, and if not the letter of the regulations, not to label these ingredients, because by the time that it's not a natural addition anymore. By the time the flavor companies have broken down this essence and oils into their individual chemicals, and they mix and match these chemicals to come up with flavor profiles specific to a particular company. You know, one company will specify one kind of flavor, and another might prefer a different kind of flavor. Basically, in North America, the flavorists have discovered that we like the flavor of ethyl butyrate. That's one of the chemicals.
Wait, say that again.
Ethyl butyrate.
I crave ethyl butyrate.
Apparently, that's what North Americans associate with the flavor of a fresh squeezed orange.
Well, what do South Americans like?
Well, perhaps a different chemical. There are thousands of chemicals that make up the flavor of fresh squeezed orange. So that's exactly the point. And, you know, whereas here we tend to like that chemical when we drink an orange juice, fresh squeezed orange juice. It may be a different chemical that, another country or culture associates with that flavor.
All right. Well, we have and that's Alyssa Hamilton, author of Squeezed, What You Don't Know About Orange Juice. If you want to go to her website, you can go to mine, MikeNovak.net. It's on this week's show, it'll take you right there. And you might want to read up with it because it sounds like it's much more complicated than we have time for. But the bottom line from one of my, you know, my tweeters are now ordering me around, and one of them tweets, what is the bottom line in this orange juice issue? I need to, oh boy, and then of course it moved away on me. It is.
She needs a simple do and don't.
Wait, yeah,
she wants a simple do and don't.
Do and don't.
Well, the bottom line is that you're paying a premium for not from concentrate. I mean, this is one bottom line, not many, but you're paying a premium from not from concentrate. And if you think it's, if you're buying it because it's a fresher, more pure product, it isn't. So you're paying more for.
So what do? What's the do?
The do is squeeze your own. Eat a fresh orange. The thing is, you know, with a whole orange, you're getting the fiber and all the nutrients, the vitamins that aren't lost in the process.
And you recommend Valencia's.
Yes, they're very tasty.
All right. With Navel. Go with Valencia.
March to June is the season in Florida for Valencia. So
March to June is when you should buy stuff and you'll get better flavor.
Exactly.
All right. Touch Alyssa Hamilton. We'll talk again at some point. It's very cool. And okay. Thanks for being with us today.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Boy, you got lots of tweets here. We're not going to get to any.
No,
we need a third hour.
We need a third hour.
I mean, I got all this stuff coming in. There's not much I can do.
About
I'm trying to.
Pets and orange juice
I'm not a bad guy. I like my pet. We'll see you next week. Go green or...
Go home.
Talk to you then.